When you think about the history of professional athletics for men and for boys, although they might be playing team sports, it's really an individualized focus. Who is the spectacular superstar? Who is going to get that amazing contract? It's individuals coming together. And so they're trained and they're coming up through life focused on their individual excellence. And the women of the W, there's a slightly different emphasis. They succeed as a team.
It will take decades to uncover the many lives we lived both together and apart in 2020. Yet the culmination of that year was marked by a definitive event, an election. In 2020, U.S. Senator Kelly Loeffler sent a public letter chastising the WNBA for supporting Black Lives Matter. And a few weeks later, players from the Atlanta Dream and Phoenix Mercury ditched their personal style statements for the tunnel walk and exchanged them for a more uniformed look. Players appeared on national television wearing black shirts with "Vote Warnock" pressed in white lettering across the front of their chests. Warnock was an underdog Democratic candidate for the Georgia Senate seat, running against Senator Kelly Loeffler, who at the time was also the co-owner of the Dream. Social justice movements and personal advocacy is nothing new for the WNBA. The W is made up of 80% Black women, over 20% identify as gay, and since their inception have been fighting for fair compensation, respect, and the right to exist as a league. On January 5th, Raphael Warnock won his runoff election against incumbent Senator Kelly Loeffler. Warnock's victory, combined with John Ossoff's win in the other runoff race, flipped Georgia blue and gave Democrats control of the Senate in addition to the majority House and White House win. Warnock noted that in the 48 hours after women in the WNBA wore shirts supporting him, his campaign raised over $180,000 and attracted 3,500 new grassroots donors. If the film documenting the WNBA's journey to activism wasn't aptly named Power of the Dream, it would have to be called When Ambitions Collide. The directorial undertaking of Dawn Porter, combined with the ferocity of the women at the W as changemakers, showcased grassroots activism and the power of the collective. Take the W off the WNBA and they helped flip a Senate seat, y'all would know every detail possible imagined about the story, said Sue Bird, four-time WNBA champion and producer of Power of the Dream. If you're still listening, put back on the W with myself and Dawn Porter as we talk about her journey to filmmaking, what makes the women of the W and women in general particularly primed to make a difference, and what story she looks to tell next. Dawn is an award-winning documentary filmmaker who specializes in creating nonfiction content for global media brands, including ESPN, Netflix, HBO, PBS, Hulu, and Apple TV. She is a two-time Sundance Film Festival award-winning director, and she was named to Variety Women's Impact Report, which lists the most influential women who have helped lead New York's $60 billion entertainment industry. Here's Dawn. Hi, Dawn. Welcome to Unexpected Curves, the sports show where we give the girls some support. Every week, we take a lot of left turns in order to get to the right answers. And to start the show off with three questions: where are you? What are you working on? And who in women's sports are you watching?
I am very glad to be here. I am in Martha's Vineyard. I'm in West Tisbury, Massachusetts. I am working on two feature documentaries and a documentary series. One is about Winnie and Nelson Mandela. And in women's sports right now, I am loving the Olympic trials.
It has been a binge watch the last few weeks of just back-to-back nights, a lot of swimming, a lot of track, gymnastics. The ladies are doing their thing, but so are you. You transitioned into filmmaking later in life, which is very different from the story of Luther Vandross in your latest film, Never Too Much. Vandross had a clear vision for his career from an early age, and he pursued that with fierce intentionality. Could you share what you've learned from telling the stories of people like Luther, who had a singular focus on their career, compared to your own experience of pivoting later in life?
Yeah, one of the things that was so interesting to find out, I think when we see and love artists or athletes at the top of their game, we're not always thinking about the process it took to get there. For Luther, as you said, from the time that he was 13 years old, he knew he wanted to be a performer. He knew he wanted to sing. He talks about seeing Dionne Warwick live in concert and thinking, he literally said, I wanted to move people the way that she moved me. So he was really thinking not only about his own skill, but he was always thinking about the audience. He was always thinking about connections. And I really loved learning that about him. And when I think about my career path, sometimes you wish you had started and just pursued that, but I'm really grateful. I had an early career as a lawyer. I practiced at a firm for 5 years and then in-house at ABC Television for 2 years. I'm really grateful for that time because I think there's a lot of crossover between what lawyers do and what documentary filmmakers do. I think in both of our stories, there's a path of work and trying to be your best at something, but clearly Luther really got it.
Yes, he nailed it, but the work doesn't evade you anything yet you do. So that's a process you can learn through any discipline. And what does your process look like? How do you decide on a subject to cover? And what about the WNBA story specifically spoke to you and your team?
You know, documentaries can take a long time, usually a year, but more often 2 or 3 or even more. So it's really important that as the filmmaker, you're just endlessly curious about the subject. And so for the W, for the women in the W, I went to my first Liberty game, I think in 8. So it was Teresa Witherspoon, it was Becky Hammon, and the energy there. And I literally remember my first game going to Liberty and seeing the name of the women on the jerseys that little boys were wearing. And I just remember really being impacted by that, that these women are breaking through and they have fans. And then fast forward today, I guess it's 30 years later, which is kind of crazy. And seeing where we are. I do a lot of political films, and this was such a dream project because I also love sports. So it was like the combination of the sports and feminism and politics. That's square at the heart, the intersection of what I'm interested in. So it was a great opportunity. And I just had a lot of admiration. These women are so young and they are so poised and strategic and smart. We see what they do on the court. And I thought knowing a little bit more about what they've been able to do off the court was also important.
Yeah, I felt like watching it. It did a really great job of highlighting their progression from these inexperienced organizers to change makers. And I think it made civic action really tangible for the viewer. But it also highlighted the immense pressure and scrutiny that comes with standing up for your core values and having them. How do you look at the film as sharing the core values and identity of the W with viewers of a broader audience?
We had some really great, if not intentional, very fortunate timing in that there's a lot of curiosity about the women of the W. And so to be able to give people a peek behind the curtain at who they are, what they're made of, not only is it a great political story, but it's a great story about why these women are becoming successful. And they're becoming successful because they haven't been able to take for granted that they can play the sport they love at a professional level. They've had to really fight in order to be able to pursue their sport. That's as much a part of the W as anything else. There's 144 women in the W, there's 400 NBA players. So the competition to become a professional women's basketball player is really, really hard. We're getting some expansion teams, which is great news, but we're not quite there yet. So now that we've got people really focused, I think people are going to be even more impressed understanding how committed they are and how strategic and intelligent and how effective. When I think of what they did, when they started their protest, the Atlanta Dream and the other teams, it was league-wide. So many, many players participated. Raphael Warnock was polling at 9% approval popularity. He ends up at 42%. And he says it is because of the activity of those young women. And I do want to emphasize young. The senior players are in their 30s, but the younger players are 20. I have kids who are that age. And to think that they figured out how to organize together when we're in the midst of a very important election right now, and people are asking themselves whether their interests or vote or activity matters. And I think that this story tells you it 1000%. The actions of a few can really help the many.
Right. No, when watching, I couldn't help but think about Colin Kaepernick. His actions were extremely impactful, but the film really put into perspective the power of the collective. The W and its players made unique sacrifices and took significant risks together, first in isolation, and that allowed them to affect profound changes in democracy. And you showed that they didn't always agree. There was back and forth, but there was a type of collaboration that we didn't see in the NFL. Like, what do you think was special about these women or women in general that allowed them to have a collaboration for tangible change?
Well, I think when you think about the history of professional athletics for men and for boys, although they might be playing team sports, it's really an individualized focus. Who is the spectacular superstar? Who is going to get that amazing contract? It's individuals coming together. And so they're trained and they're coming up through life focused on their individual excellence. And the women of the W, there's a slightly different emphasis. They succeed as a team. They succeed as a group. They were just coming off of a collective bargaining agreement where they got to increase their salaries. They secured paid maternity leave. They're used to working together in order to advance. And that's the sad truth is, like, there's very few female superstars who could make it alone, but I think there's something even bigger. I don't think they want to. I think part of, what everybody said is they enjoy being on that team. They enjoy how collectively their power is that much exponentially greater. And I don't think that they take that for granted, having that power.
Just looking at some of the individual women sports stars and Naomi Osaka, some people that have publicly come out and said, that pressure of in isolation, I don't want to say ruin their game, but created a gap in time where they didn't love it as much and where they had to seek outside things and people and community in order to reinvigorate their game. So that is a really interesting thing to think about, just the systems that maybe we grow up in sport are a bit more nurturing to the team versus individual stardom. Another thing I couldn't help but thinking about when watching the film was how most sport documentaries exist in a specific formula. The films and shows aim to drive fandom and excitement around the physical aspects of the game. Power of the Dream was not made in the image of those works. I'm thinking about episodic dramas like Drive to Survive, Breakpoint, and Netflix's latest upcoming iteration, Sprint. Your film breaks away from this formula, diving deeply into the social and political context surrounding the game. Did you see this departure from traditional focus as a risk? Or was it a welcome challenge to explore these broader themes?
Yeah, I have to commend Amazon and also Sue Bird and Nneka Ogumike, our leaders in the project. They wanted to lean into their political action. And that's the story that they were focused, that I was charged with telling from them. And I think that says a lot about them. That I think there's one point Natasha Cloud says, this is like so much bigger than basketball. This kind of activism is in the DNA of a lot of these players. A lot of them are gay. A lot of them, they're underpaid. And so this kind of action of fighting, they've had to do it. Do they want to do it? I don't even think that's, we don't have the ability to ask that question because they have to. It's kind of no choice, no problem, right? You do what you need to do. But I think what they're finding, and to your point, is a greater satisfaction with their sport, with their career, with their success, because it's lonely being a superstar individually. It's mentally challenging. One of the parts of the film that I love so much is when Leyja Clarendon says to Sue Bird, I can't do this right now. I gotta back off. And Sue is like, I got you. Like, and we've all had that feeling, right? Where you're just like, I just can't tomorrow, but maybe I can in a week after I've had a little time away. I've done a lot of films about political leaders, and the ones who are able to last are able to surround themselves with people and figure out how to get some kind of balance in their lives, whether it's through their families or other activities. And that's what the women of the W are doing for each other. It was a story that really spoke to me. I think when we try and emulate the worst parts of men's professional athletics, it is not to our benefit as women. And I think they're charting a different path. I hope that a lot of other athletes take a look at them and how they've organized themselves and how that support is really helpful for each of them.
In the last few years, it's seen a little bit more administrators and leagues building an image based on their athletes' personal experience versus the archetype of this is the men's game. How do we repeat their success? And I think this film and the women in the W are a really great example of that. And where do you go from here? You asked that question at the end of the film a little bit to the players, but how do you look at your role as a filmmaker, as being a playmaker?
I'm really excited that things that I'm naturally gravitating to are finding a lot of interest and support in our audiences. The positive feedback we've gotten from all types of people, from all types of background, was really gratifying and encouraging. I mean, I think it's a cool story, right? It's just a cool political story. But I think there's also this deeper appreciation for some of these athletes and who they are as people. So I'm really happy about that. I would love to do more sports stories. I did a series for ESPN about 37 words. That was really fun. Plus, I got to meet Billie Jean King, and that's become like, something of a friendship. I mean, she's just a remarkable person. I think there's more and more interest in these stories, and I am here for all of
Yes. I
it.
know. I'm like, I definitely want to see more. I have to plug the maternal health advocacy work Alicia Montaño and Allison Felix have done for track and field. I think they've really rewritten the narrative of the sport and for what women are able to, how they're able to prolong their careers, how they're able to interface with family and balance in that way. So I'm very excited to hopefully see somebody tackle that subject. But we're in the thralls of election season, everyone's favorite time of year. What's keeping you hopeful? How do you look at your projects as contributing to momentum of the importance of civic action, responsibility, and participation?
I did a film called The Way I See It about Barack Obama's White House photographer. And the whole premise of the film was people longing for a time when the white person in the White House was taking it seriously. And that is a film that I have had people say they watch multiple times and they cry. And they were crying. It wasn't only a love for Barack Obama. It was a love for civility and for respect for the rule of law. It was the highest rated film on MSNBC, non-news, non-live event, a film about a time in the White House when we trusted the occupants there. I don't think that's gone away. And so I think, there's a tradition of underpolling young people, underpolling people of color. So I kind of take those with a grain of salt. I think there's a very sober question that we have to ask. This is a binary choice. It is one person or the other. We can push the person who wins if we elect the right person to do the right things. So, I also think there's not one person who runs the country. There's an administration, and I want to elect the person who's going to put competent, intelligent, empathetic people into positions of authority. So, I do not want Eileen Cannon deciding the clean water regulation. So, there's quite a lot at stake. And I actually believe in people. I tend to be kind of an optimistic person.
Well, if the power of the dream does anything, it restores optimism. Again, just felt like a very tangible way to see what your work can do if you collaborate and if you allocate it to the right things. All things are still possible. So thank you for, yeah, just sharing work that reminds us the ways that we can make a difference.
Yeah, There's also something to joy. It was joyful telling this story. And I feel that way about the other film I did, Luther Vandross, Never Too Much. There's also something important to us collectively appreciating a story with sports, with music. Those are the kinds of things that we can share no matter what your background is. So, I hope that my work also is viewed that way.
Yes, I'm excited for audience, hopefully, to watch them.
Great to
Awesome.
talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you too. Thank you.
Go democracy.
Yes.